Hi, and welcome to Wrestling for Higher Consciousness. I'm Larry Goldfarb, and this is my blog. Recently, I had the pleasure to talk to Judith Stransky about her experience studying with Moshe Feldenkrais back in the 1970s. Both an Alexander teacher and a certified awareness through movement teacher, Judith is one of the unsung heroes of the Feldenkrais method. Her transcripts of the ATMs that Dr. Feldenkrais taught at Esalen are used by Feldenkrais teachers and are taught in Feldenkrais trainings the world over. During our conversation, Judith clarified the true nature of the course that Moshe taught in Esalen, revealed the details of what actually happened during that Esalen workshop, including where the terms functional integration and awareness through movement came from. And she talks about her relationship with Moshe and his method. She's delightful, charming, and I'll let her speak for herself.
Hi, this is Larry. I'd like to give you a chance to introduce yourself to the Feldenkrais community. And then I'd like to talk about how you met Moshe. Maybe we could start there.
Well, I didn't meet Moshe in Israel. I met him, the first time I met him was at the Esalen workshop.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't meet him before that. But my friends knew a lot about him. My friends in Israel told me a lot of things about him. So I don't know where you want me to start.
we already started, so that was good. At the time when you went to Esalen, you hadn't met him yet, and you were already an Alexander teacher, right?
Right. By the way, in Israel, I did see him once on the beach. We had a class, and my friends and I were on the beach, and they pointed him out to me because they knew who he was. They knew what he looked like, and I didn't.
So he was teaching a class on the beach? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I can tell you a lot of things about what it was like to study with him in Israel, even though I didn't study with him or meet him. But the couple who had the Feldenkrais class in their home, the one that I was in, the wife had been to his classes, and she dropped out because the atmosphere was not good, and she thought the work was great, but the atmosphere was not good.
Tell me more about what you mean about the atmosphere.
Well, what she said was, now she was a very bright lady,
mm-hmm.
So she recognized how good the work was, how marvelous it was, but she said there were 40 to 100 people in the classes every time, and he would walk around smoking, dropping cigarette ash on people.
Sorry.
And so that was not pleasant.
Really?
It wasn't pleasant to have such a huge class. And so she dropped out. I don't know how long she stayed in the class, but she dropped out. And then what happened was, I mean, a long time later, she and her husband gave a party in their home. They really just rented two rooms in a house. That was their home,
mm-hmm.
in the father's house, the father of the husband. And they gave a party. It was crowded with people, jammed. They knew a lot of people in Tel Aviv. And one of the guests brought a friend. And the friend was Lydia Marcouche, who was a disciple of Feldenkrais and who gave classes, small classes, not more than six people in a class, because the classes were given either in her living room or in the living room of people's homes.
Uh-huh.
And so the couple whom I knew, Esther and Danielle, were so thrilled to meet her, they decided to hold a class in their home, and they could only fit four people on their living room floor. And that's how it started.
Wow. And so this was after Esalen?
No, this was in Israel. This was long before Esalen.
Okay.
1958. Esalen was 1972.
That's right. So, and you were in those classes as well?
Yes.
Wow.
And I didn't want to join because it meant going in the morning twice a week before going to work, and I didn't want to get up early, but they insisted that I join, And the fourth person was the director of the Ministry of Education.
Wow.
The funny thing is, the director's son was a friend of theirs. So they had asked the son to join the class, and he wouldn't join. And so he spoke to his dad about it, and his dad joined the class.
Okay.
So they had never met the dad before. They knew the son. And so that's how it came about. It's because Esther had been in Moshe's classes and recognized how valuable the work was, but she couldn't stand the atmosphere. So when they met someone else who was teaching his work, and only small classes, small groups, they immediately jumped at the idea. And but they didn't want to go to her, drive to her apartment, so they arranged a class in their home.
Fantastic.
And there were just the four of us. So I was in very illustrious company.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel himself was a member of the Prime Minister's office, who had been loaned to the American Embassy as a consultant.
Okay.
And that's how I knew him, because we worked on the same project together and we shared an office.
Okay.
So that's how I got to know him. And he and his wife befriended me. And so I was at the party where that Feldenkrais teacher was, came with one of the guests.
Mm-hmm.
And they introduced me to her and insisted that I join a class that they were going to form. And so we did it twice a week in the mornings. And the other thing was, I was the only one who didn't speak Hebrew.
Oh.
And Lee knew Hebrew and English, and the other three all spoke English fluently. And so I was damn lucky.
Wow.
Taught the classes in English for my benefit.
How sweet.
I mean, it was as if this was destined.
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Wow. And so, if I may ask, what were you doing at the M, or how you met this person and you were in the same office? What were you doing in that office?
Well, I was a secretary.
Mm.
So I had the job of secretary for, it was a special cultural project for 2 years. And the Israeli Prime Minister's office loaned this young Israeli fellow as a consultant. So he worked there full time on the job. But he was loaned by the Israeli Prime Minister's office, by Teddy Kollek's office. Teddy Kollek was director of the Israeli Prime Minister's office at that time.
All right.
Had you heard of Teddy Kollek?
No, I haven't.
Well, later he became mayor of Jerusalem, and he transformed Jerusalem.
Okay. So how long did you take these classes?
About a year.
Okay.
Before I left Israel.
Okay. And then how did you...
And twice a week.
Twice a week. That was before you were an Alexander teacher, I guess.
Right.
So then you became an Alexander teacher, and somehow you found out Moshe was coming to Esalen.
Yes.
Years later.
Right. I had an Alexander colleague in San Francisco, and he was giving Alexander lessons to Stanley Kellerman. You know who Stanley Kellerman
is? I sure do.
Is? Okay.
Yeah.
So my colleague, Frank...
Oh, I know Frank, too.
Frank Ottewell?
I know Frank Ottewell, too, yeah.
You know he passed away.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, about 2 years ago.
Oh.
2015, he passed away.
In my youth, when I was figuring out which path I would take, I went and I was a model, I guess, or a student at the institute in San Francisco, at his institute. And I spoke to him quite a few times. He was really wonderful.
Yes, wonderful person. So Stanley Kellerman and Will Schutz organized this training program of Moshe's at Esalen. It was the first program of its kind at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so Stanley invited Frank to be in the program, and then Frank called me and told me about it, and he said, I remember you told me you took Feldenkrais classes in Israel. I said, that's right, and I've wanted to train in the work. So he said, I'll talk to Stanley. And so that's how I got to be in it, because Frank remembered that I had done the Feldenkrais work in Israel and had wanted to train in it.
Fantastic.
So we were three Alexander teachers in the program, Frank and Ilana Rufenfeld and me.
And Ilana was there, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember talking to her a long time ago about that. Okay, so and was it determined ahead of time that you were going to take the notes?
No, that nobody determined that, no. So I'll tell you how it happened.
Please.
So there were 14 people in the program. Okay, 14 participants.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them brought tape recorders, and Frank brought a tape recorder. I didn't. But Frank told me ahead of time that he was bringing a tape recorder, so I brought my portable electric typewriter so that I could transcribe the tapes.
Okay.
So many people had tape recorders, and Moshe didn't object to that. He saw them setting up their tape recorders at every lesson, you know, or every day, not at every day. So he didn't say a word about it. He didn't object. He didn't say a word. So that was clearly acceptable to him. And then, so every evening I was transcribing the group lesson. By the way, when we started, there were no terms like awareness through movement or functional integration. We created those terms in that program. So it was just called the Feldenkrais method. And it was called the group work and the private lessons. And so I was transcribing the tapes of the group work. And then one day...
Carry on, please. Sorry for the interruption.
So, you know, this was just something that Frank and I decided to do.
Right.
So nothing official about it. And one day, Moshe approached me and said, you know, he stayed up late and he would walk around and prowl around at night, you know. And so one day he approached me and he said that when he was walking by my room, he heard me typing. And he said, what are you typing? And I said, I'm transcribing the lessons, the group lessons. And he said, may I look at your transcripts? I said, sure. So I brought the transcripts to him and he looked at them. And the next day he said to me, these are the best transcripts I've ever seen. Well, you know, I was as skilled as executive secretary, so that's why they were good.
Of course. I wondered what your secret was.
Right. Well, that was it. And so I said, of course. I'm sorry. So he said, these are the best transcripts I've ever seen. He said, when you finish them all, would you mail them to me to Israel and I'll pay for the postage? And I said, of course I'll mail them to you and I won't accept any postage from you. I'll send them to you. I'll send them to you. You don't pay me anything. So that was the arrangement we made. And then the day after that, he arrived in the morning, not he arrived in the morning, he all of a sudden whipped out a document for each of us to sign. And the document stated that any transcripts or any notes of these lessons during this training workshop are not to be available to the public. They can only be available to Feldenkrais practitioners.
Uh-huh.
And we had to sign the document.
Okay.
And so that was the only official part about it. And so that was why I would never let anybody have the notes except David Burson when he asked me. He was the only Feldenkrais practitioner who requested the notes from me. And so I could let him have them, but I wouldn't let anybody else have them. And we weren't allowed to give the tapes to anybody either.
Mm-hmm.
That we made. Now, the tapes were being professionally recorded by a gentleman who was Big Sur Recordings. Do you know about that?
I do.
Okay. So he was professionally making professional tapes and recordings. And I really believe that's one of the main reason that Moshe didn't allow us to provide our tapes or transcripts to the public, because the Bixxer recording tapes were going to be sold to the public, you see.
Exactly.
So he was protecting those sales, obviously. And so that was pretty clear. That's what he was doing. Mm-hmm. He was protecting those professional sales or commercial sales. And so that was fine with all of us. I mean, we had no issue with that. So that was the arrangement.
Awesome. Okay. Well, you know, I've been to Esalen. I've taught there. I think it was in a very different, you know, state.
We were at Esalen South. We were housed at Esalen South, which was a separate building. It's a building that was 1 mile south of the road, and it used to be a Holiday Inn. And Holiday Inn gave up the building, and Esalen bought it and took it over. And so we actually were much more comfortable there than in the little rooms at Esalen proper.
Uh-huh.
We had large rooms, and every room had huge glass sliding doors with a full view of the ocean.
Wow.
So it was wonderful. It was 2 or 3 stories high. And we had these wonderful rooms. And one of those rooms was our work room, so it was a bit small for us. We were a bit crowded in there, 14 of us, but we managed. And and then we would go to Esalen proper for our meal. So we had all our meals at Esalen proper, but we were housed at Esalen South, and we had the actual workshop there, the training workshop at Esalen South.
And did everyone eat together?
Usually we did, but we weren't always at one table. Usually mm-hmm. we were spread out among 2 tables.
How many people were there?
And, you know, we take turns. So, Moshe, you know, we take turns. Sometimes some of us would sit at the same table as Moshe. Sometimes others would sit there. We, you know, there was nothing really organized about it, but we tended to sit together. But divided up among 2 tables, and we didn't always have the same people at the same 2 tables, so we moved around, and so, you know, we not all of us sat with Moshe at every meal, but we certainly moved around, and every one of us sat with him for many of the meals. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. I didn't know the whole story.
Well, no one would unless they were there.
Of course.
Yeah.
So how many people were there?
14.
14. Do you remember who else was there?
It was by invitation. It was not open at all. It was by invitation only. And so when Frank recommended me to Stanley called me on the phone and interviewed me on the phone. And after a few minutes, he said, "You're in, but you also have to be approved by Will Schutz." So I called Will Schutz, and, you know, he lived at Esalen in those days.
Right.
I don't know if you knew that.
I did.
With his girlfriend, Christy. And so Will insisted that I come up to Esalen and visit him, which I thought was, you know, a bit demanding, because Stanley didn't demand that. He just talked to me on the phone.
Do you remember who else was there? I think Judith Aston was there, right?
Yes. Well, I remember most of them. You want to know the ones I remember?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So there was Judith Aston. There was Betty Fuller and her guy. I can't remember his name.
Dub Lee.
Yes. So Betty Fuller and Dub Lee, Seymour Carter. And there was a fellow whose name I can't really remember. You know, most of them were psychotherapists. And this fellow, the last name was Downing or Downey or something like that. I can't remember his first name.
Okay.
So that's 5. And then there were we 3 Alexander teachers. Then there was a middle-aged European lady from San Diego who taught body movement.
Mm.
That's 9. And then there was Stanley, which is 10, and Will, which is 11, and Christy, which is 12. So there were just 2 more.
Deborah Lotus was there.
Oh, Dick Price. No, she was not.
She was not.
Not in our program. Halfway through, she came to visit Esalen, looking very bedraggled, but she was not in our program, definitely not. Oh. And I think she claims she was, or implies that she was. Deborah and I knew each other in New York, by the way. So Dick Price was there. You know who Dick Price was?
That name rings a bell.
He was co-founder of Esalen with Mike Murphy.
There we go. Okay. So, oops, yeah. I blew that one.
There. So there's only one other, but I can't think who that was.
Okay.
So I got 13.
That's pretty good.
And I can't remember who the 14th one was.
No worries.
And as I say, I can't remember the name of that young fellow. I remember what he looked like. But the last name was something like Downey or Downing.
Okay.
He was a young psychotherapist.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's, I had no idea how many people had attended.
Yeah, it was 14. Altogether. Now, Judith didn't stay for the... She only was there for the first 10 days or something.
Okay.
And then she left. Judith Aston.
Mm-hmm.
So she was not there the whole time. She was there only a short time.
Got it. Okay, and what do you remember about... how long was it? How many days was it?
It was 5.5 weeks.
5.5 weeks,
and
wow.
We worked 5 days a week, 5 full days a week, and we had the weekends off.
And what was your impression?
Well, Moshe, as you know, was very temperamental.
Yes.
I mean, you've trained with him, right?
I did. I was his cook as well, or one of his cooks, so I had a sense of him both in front of the class and at home.
Yeah. Well, you know how temperamental he was.
Yes.
So I don't know if you want me to address that in detail or not.
I'm curious for, personally, I'm curious because, you know, I met him 9 years later than that, after that. And
and where did you do your training? In which city was it?
In Amherst.
Amherst.
Yeah,
okay.
In the Amherst training. And so, you know, for me, there's a... a lot of what you're telling me actually is it's not a part of the history that I grew up with, because I did my first ATM lesson when I was 18 and I started the training when I was 22. That was 36 years ago. I mean, but, you know, for me, the part of the story that you're telling, which is what happened during those 5 weeks and some of what happened before, they're not a part of the history that I know, or that I think most of the teachers know. So
that's true. Yes. As I say, only the 14 of us who were there know it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I'm interested in talking to you. I mean, those lessons are...
Okay. I'll tell you two aspects. One aspect was his relationship towards me. Now, we had never met before. Okay.
Yeah.
So on the first day, in the middle of the day, a lunch break, I went up to him and I introduced myself to him. And I told him that I had lived in Israel and that I had had a year of lessons twice a week with Lydia Marcouche. And he didn't say a word.
Okay.
And I knew he was temperamental because my friends knew he was like, my friends in Israel, and they had told me. So, you know, I knew a lot about his personality without ever having met him. So I knew this could work for me or it could work against me. That one never knew with Moshe which way he would go with information like that. So I was aware I was taking a risk that it could turn him against me. Now, I was the only one who had had extensive Feldenkrais work, because the only other two who'd experienced his work at all were Wilter Schutz and his girlfriend Christy, because they had gone to Israel, participated in a few classes with him. They had gone to Israel to talk to him and persuade him or arrange with him to come and do a training in the United States. So while there, they attended a few classes, right?
Okay.
And nobody else had had any Feldenkrais work. So I had had about 100 lessons, right?
Right.
So this was exceptional in that group. So anyway, the way Moshe reacted to that was during class. if I did some, if I didn't do a movement well, he'd say, look at Chomsky. She doesn't know what she is doing. She studied with another teacher. She doesn't know what she's doing. Look at her. But when I did a movement well, he'd say, look at Judith. She did my work in Israel. She knows how to do the work. Look at her. Look how well she knows the movement. So, you know, it would go back and forth, right?
Okay.
And I think you could recognize that's typical Moshe.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Right. Now, that changed after he saw the transcripts. After he saw the transcripts and he asked me to send them all to him when I finished them, then he was nothing but sweetness to me. Never anymore saying, look at Chomsky. None of that anymore. You know, with Moshe, I just knew you let this roll off your water, roll off you like water off a duck's back. That's the only way you could be in his classes, because he was horrible to other people as well, not to everybody, but to some others. And it wasn't pleasant for us when he was horrible. It wasn't pleasant for any of us to hear it. But you let it roll off you like water off a duck's back. And I'm going to address that in a moment, but I'll finish with how he was with me.
Okay.
So because I had agreed to send him all the transcripts and I refused to let him pay for postage, he then gave me privately two individual lessons. By now we had come up with the names, and I'll tell you how that happened. I'll tell you that in a moment. But by now we had come up with the names awareness through movement and functional integration. So he gave me two FIs privately, and the only person present was Frank Ottewell. And he did those as a gift to me because I was giving him the transcripts.
Okay.
And those two lessons were miraculous.
Oh.
Absolutely miraculous. And nobody but Moshe could have done what he did. He really addressed the defects in my body. And one of them was on the chair, one lesson, and the other was on the table, but both of them addressing my defect. My worst defect was my legs, both legs, not knees, and flat feet. And they had improved enormously with Alexander. But, you know, there was still some of it there. I mean, it was like one-tenth of what it used to be. It used to be horrible.
Wow.
And it was getting worse all the time until I had Alexander. And then I'd say it got 90% better. And I remember my mother saying to me, Judith, what Alexander did for your legs is a miracle. So he addressed my legs in those two private sessions. Now, the schedule we had was that every day we had two ATMs, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. We had two FIs, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And during the 5.5 weeks, everybody got two FIs. And we all watched. We were all observing. And there were two lectures, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. So that was the daily schedule. And there was always a mid-morning tea break and a mid-afternoon tea break. And, of course, a lunch break. And so when I had my first turn for an FI, this was before he gave me the private session. It was before he ever approached me about the transcripts. But he left me till, I think, the second to last one to get a private turn, to get an FI in front of the whole group as part of the course. And he did something that wasn't very nice. He didn't do this with anybody else. It was summer. I was a little bit zaftig in those days. I was in my early 30s or mid-30s and a little bit zaftig. And it was summer and I was wearing short shorts. So he had me kneel and put my elbows on a chair or something. And so what was in view of the whole crowd was my butt, my bum. Okay?
I know the lesson.
And he worked on my bum. And he didn't do this with anybody else. But here I was, fairly young, a little zaftig, wearing short shorts. You get the picture?
I do.
And he worked on my bum. And, you know, they were all embarrassed about it. You could hear a pin drop. Nobody said a word or muttered or moved or anything, because they all were kind of embarrassed for me. So he did that FI, just working on my butt, and he didn't really do anything. Then when my turn came for my next one, he did a routine one with me lying on a table, and that didn't do anything for me either. Now, you must realize, Larry, you know, I had had years of Alexander lessons, and so if I hadn't had that, those two FIs might have done something for me, or I might have felt something. But because I had had so much change in my body from Alexander, because he just worked on me routinely, it did nothing for me. I didn't feel anything happen, and I didn't feel any effect, and I didn't see any effect when I looked in the mirror. But in contrast, the two privates he gave me as a gift were miraculous.
Wow.
Now, also, I saw this in his teaching when he did ATMs. What I saw was, and you probably experienced this or saw it, you know, it could get very nasty and say to somebody where we're doing shoulder movement, you can't call that a shoulder. What do you think that is? You think that's a shoulder? How can you call yourself a psychologist when you can't move your shoulders properly? You know, he would talk like that. Or Seymour was always at his feet, and he would kick Seymour and say, oh, you don't know how to do anything, Seymour. You have to do it like this and like that, and he would kick him. And we'd go up to Seymour. Some of us went up to Seymour one day and said, why do you always lie at his feet when he's so nasty to you? And Seymour said, because I'm changing so much.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you know who Seymour Carter was?
I don't think I'm going to pass this test either. No.
Okay. He was a Gestalt therapist. I don't remember from which city. And he was like in his mid to late, maybe late 30s, a bearded fellow, slender, and a pretty bright fellow, pretty bright. Otherwise, I don't think he would have been invited by Stanley and Will. You know, we were 14 hand-picked people, so they didn't invite just anybody. So Seymour seemed to be, I hadn't heard of him, but he seemed to be well known in the Gestalt community as a Gestalt therapist. Anyway, so Moshe, and I know you must have experienced the same thing, how nasty he could be to people. But what I noticed was, when somebody really had a problem with a movement, Moshe didn't say a word to the person. Moshe would start giving instructions for doing the movement in different ways, a variety of ways, and then we'd come back to the original way, and now that person could do it. So I saw that when somebody had a real problem, Moshe talked like an angel. A very wise angel. But when he was berating people, I don't know, he must have thought that it wasn't a real problem with them or something. I don't know.
Interesting.
But I saw that difference.
Interesting.
And so I modeled my teaching on the way he taught, like an angel. So that's how I did my teaching always. I never pointed out to anybody they were wrong or weren't doing anything well, ever. And so I took that as my model, the way he taught.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And now I want to tell you how it came about the names. ATM and FI.
Please.
So I don't remember how long we'd been in the workshop. Was it 2 weeks or 3 weeks? I don't remember. But one day, you know, when we weren't doing ATMs lying on the floor, we were always sitting on the floor. When he lectured, we were sitting on the floor. And now, when he did an FI, we were all standing. We were standing around watching him. But when he lectured, we were sitting on the floor. So when he wasn't doing an FI, we were always sitting on the floor. And for ATMs, of course, we were lying on the floor unless it was a sitting lesson. So anyway, so we were sitting on the floor one day, and somehow somebody or a couple of us said, you know, you need a different name for the group work and for the individual work.
Okay.
And he had, his book Awareness Through Movement had just been published. So, and that had 10 group lessons in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know. So we said, you can call the group work Awareness Through Movement. And that seemed to be a no-brainer because there were 10 lessons in his book. So we said, that should be called Awareness Through Movement. And you know, Moshe just sat there and he didn't say a word. He didn't say a word. He just let us talk about it. We talked about it really to him, but we were throwing out our ideas. And he gave, he was expressionless and didn't say a word. Then we had great difficulty trying to find a term for the individual work, the hands-on work. We came, you know, different people came up with different terms and none of them seemed right or appropriate. And then we said, well, the only term that seems right is the one that Ida Rolf already is using, which is structural integration. That is the most appropriate term, we said to Moshe, for your individual work, but we can't use it because Ida Rolf is using it. And then somebody said functional integration, and we all said, yay, that's it, yay. And Moshe just sat there impassively. He didn't say a word. So from then on, those were the terms. And Moshe never said yes or no or good or bad. He didn't say a word. We were the ones decided these are the terms. And from then on, those were the terms that we used.
Wow. Wow. So, I mean, interesting. I mean, I'm fascinated. Can you, do you have any recollection of, by any chance, of who said functional integration?
No. You know, there were 14 of us and sure. Different ones were just shouting things out, you know. So
I think that, I mean, I think both of them are so, I mean, in terms of describing the work, you know, and in terms of what Moshe did with them afterwards and how he used each of the terms, I mean, he made them his own.
Yes, but remember, he actually coined the term Awareness to Movement because it was the title of his book.
Absolutely.
We just said that should be the name for the group work.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really invent that term. He did.
Mm-hmm.
But we said that should be the name for your group work. By the way, let me go back to Israel.
Okay.
When I was in Israel, it was called the Feldenkrais Method. But what was known as the Feldenkrais Method was only the group classes.
Mm-hmm.
Most people didn't even know he did individual work.
Hmm.
He did individual work very quietly and privately only on people with severe problems.
Mm.
It was not available to the general public. So people who knew of the Feldenkrais Method, most of them didn't even know he did individual work.
Wow.
And then this brings me to fast forward to Esalen now. And one evening, Moshe took a walk with me. Just me, nobody else. It's the only time he walked with me alone. And and he told me the history. I mean, of course, he told me about his niece, and we all knew that story. And I mean, even in Israel, I knew that story about his knees and the operations that he refused and blah, blah. So I knew that story already in Israel. But so he told me that story again. And then he told me that because he helped himself with his knees through imagination, imagining how the different parts of the knees are to work and imagining them functioning well, and then very gradually starting to do very tiny movements. And so that's what he did for himself. And then he said he could do it himself. He can help other people using the same approach. So he started to help other people with severe problems using the same approach. And he said to himself then one day, I'm sorry, then he said one day he said to himself, now if I could help large groups of people, if I invent or develop exercises that do the same as what I do with my hands. And so that's when he started to develop the exercises. I like to call them movements rather than exercises because they're so different to what we call exercises. So he started to create movements that were doing the same as what he did with his hands. And that's how he started giving classes. Now, I know when I lived in Tel Aviv, there was an article on his group classes in the Jerusalem Post, which was the English language newspaper. And there was a photograph of people in a class. As I said, now there was no mention of his doing hands-on work. It was only about the classes. And the article stated that the first classes he gave were only to dancers.
Uh-huh.
And then he spread it to the general public. But the first ones were dancers.
Okay.
When we first taught, you know, that those lessons have become a kind of, I think, you know, there's the lessons in awareness through movement. I think there's actually 11 lessons, because one of the lessons is just a talk. But I think there's 11 lessons in that book. But then, you know, there's this collection, which, I mean, I listened to the first lesson the other day from your workshop, the one that we're talking about, and it was interesting to me, you know, listening to it, not like I had the first time years, decades ago, but I mean, you know, I could recognize that was Moshe teaching in a style that was very akin to how he taught in Israel, in English, though. And also just how he talked and what he said, and I mean, it was for me. It resonates, right? Those lessons. Yes. And
well, here's another little bit of history from that workshop. So after a few days, we said to Moshe, you know, the ATMs he was giving us, there seemed to be no rhyme or reason or order to them. It seemed very haphazard, the order. There was no order. So we said to him, could you please teach us these ATMs in a certain order, like the beginning and then the intermediate and then the advanced? And he said, yes. And so lesson 18 is called number one.
Huh.
Because he considered that the beginning, as far as having an order is concerned.
Wow, that's.
Am I being clear?
Oh, you're being you're being, not only are you being clear, but you just shook up my sandbox. I mean,
so For a few lessons, it was clear to us he was giving them in an order. They were building on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, there was no order anymore, and we just gave up. We said, you know, we can't have him do things the way we want him to. Let's just have him do it the way he wants to. So we never brought it up again.
So was there, I mean, was there quite a, I mean, it sounds like the participants were having a conversation amongst themselves outside of class about the class.
Well, it was even worse than that.
Do tell.
All right. We all arrived at Esalen on a certain afternoon. And then we had a gathering in the evening, a meeting of all of us together with Moshe. And we said to Moshe that we would like to have a schedule. And he didn't respond to that, so we told him what the schedule was that we would like. I mean, with his agreement, and he agreed to it. And that was, it's what I outlined to you before, 2 group classes every day, 2 private lessons every day with everybody getting a turn in rotation, and everybody would then have 2 turns by the end of the training, and 2 lectures every day. And he agreed to it. It was fine. So the first day he did that, and I can't remember if he did it the second day, but then he didn't. He did very little teaching, and he did mostly lecturing, which he loved to do. So then we did have a meeting outside of class one evening. We organized a meeting among ourselves, and we discussed, what shall we do? Shall we ask him to stick to the schedule, or shall we let him do this just any way he wants to do it? And it was approximately half and half. About half the people said, he's the great man, let him do it the way he wants to. And about half the people said, but we're not learning this way. I mean, we're not being trained.
Right.
We're not being trained this way. When he just lectures most of the time and does very little teaching, then we're not getting a training. So we took a vote. And by a bare majority, the ones who wanted the schedule won. By a very slim majority. So then we said, well, somebody has to go to Moshe now and tell him. And tell him that we've had a meeting and we have voted on it and we have decided that he has to adhere to the schedule which he has agreed to, and that we insist that he adheres to it. And nobody wanted to be the one to go. So finally we said it must be one of the 2 organizers, either Stanley or Will. And finally we selected Will. We said to Will Schutz, you have to go. And so Will didn't want to go, but he had no choice. We all insisted. So he walked to the door to walk out. He opened the door, and there was Moshe with his ear to the keyhole.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wow.
We didn't know how long he'd been there. Moshe had gotten wind that we were having a meeting. Somehow he got wind of it. He sensed it.
Wow.
And he knew where we were and which room it was. So we all had a shock. We saw him stoop there outside the door. So we invited him in. And as we didn't know how long he'd been there, we invited him in and we spoke to him very respectfully and with great deference, but said that we feel that we get the best training if he would adhere to the schedule that he had agreed upon. And he said yes. And that was the end of the meeting. So the next day, we are there, and So, you know, he gives a lecture, and the lecture was not to be longer than an hour, and so according to the schedule, and so he ends at the end of the hour, and then he says, "You idiots, you don't know what you're doing, you don't know what you want." What did he say about his lecture? He said, "Everybody loves my lectures, and you don't want my lectures, you idiots," he said. But he stuck to the schedule.
Small price to pay.
Sorry?
I said, oh, it's a small price to pay, right? I mean, he could be upset, but at least he kept to the schedule.
So. Yeah, but after that, he never said anything anymore. Oh, another thing. He really did not want to do the training.
Really?
By the way, there was never a training like that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the teachers who were trained by him in Israel prior to that, that was more like an apprenticeship. It wasn't an organized training program.
Mm-hmm.
And this was. Now, we were only being trained in ATMs. We were not being trained in FIs.
Right.
We were all getting FIs, but it was very clear this was not a training in FIs.
Mm-hmm.
He was not teaching us how to put our hands on people. So that was clear. We were being trained in ATMs, but not in FIs. But there was never an organized training program ever before, and he had never done an organized training program, so he was kind of rebellious. And he didn't want to do it. What he said was,
"I'm sorry.
Bring me the cripples from the hospital. I want to work on the cripples from the hospital." And we said to him, "Moshe, we paid you a lot of money to come here and train us. And we are not bringing cripples from the hospital. You
wow.
have to train us." After a while, he stopped asking for the cripples from the hospital.
Thank goodness. You know, he named you an ATM teacher at the end of that. Did he do that with the other people, too?
He named me what?
Well, you know, when I called and got your answering machine, it says Alexandra Technique and Feldenkrais Lessons. So you are a Feldenkrais teacher, an ATM teacher.
Yes, certified.
Certified. Did he certify the other participants?
Oh, yes. Yeah, but it wasn't at that time. It happened later. What happened was, that was 1972. In 1973, he did the same kind of training in Berkeley for 6 weeks for 30 participants. You
right.
know about that, right?
Yes, I did.
Now, it was very different than ours. I was there for part of the time, not the whole time. I was there for about I came about halfway through, and it was very different. But then, after that, he had his first training where he trained people in FIs as well as ATMs, and that was over three summers. It was in San Francisco.
At Lone Mountain College.
The third summer. Sorry?
At Lone Mountain College, yeah.
At the end of the third summer, he said to them, I wasn't there, but he said to them, "You are not ready to be practitioners. You need to have a fourth summer." And so after the fourth summer, he certified them as practitioners. Then I wrote to Moshe and explained the situation to him and said, "Could you please write me a letter stating that you have certified me to teach ATM classes?" And he did. He sent me a handwritten letter.
Hmm.
Now, he did state there that I am not certified to teach FIs, which was fine with me.
That's
that he
fair.
Put that in the letter. That
right.
was fine. But it, aside from that one brief sentence, the rest of it, there were about three paragraphs stating my qualifications and my credentials and that I had trained with him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I am a qualified, certified Feldenkrais teacher of ATM awareness through movement. And I think the... And no, then what happened? Okay, so I had that. I don't know if any of the others asked him for a letter. But after the Feldenkrais Guild was formed, then they certified all of us who were in that program as an ATM teacher. So we all got an official certificate from the Guild as an ATM teacher.
Do you remember what year that was, Judith?
Well, it's written on my certificate. It was the year the Guild was founded, as far as I remember. So we were all certified by the Guild, but prior to that, I had Feldenkrais's personal certification. And did you know that Moshe had Alexander lessons in England?
I did.
And that it was very much influenced by the Alexander technique. Did you know that?
I did. I have a lot to chew on.
Yes!
I do.
Probably more than you expected.
No. Let's just say I'm certainly not disappointed. No, I'm enthralled and grateful. I think probably I've taken up enough of your time, at least for one time.
Oh, well, let me just tell you one other thing.
Please.
About how Moshe taught the ATMs. He had a brand new gadget, which was a tape recorder, a little tape recorder, that took 45-minute tape. So it was a small pocket-sized tape recorder that was brand new in those days, 1972. The others were large tape recorders, you know, that took much larger tapes. So he was thrilled with his little gadget. And so he made sure that every lesson was 45 minutes long and no longer than that. And so if he digressed or wanted to say something to somebody on, "What are you doing, you idiot?" he would turn off the tape recorder.
He edited himself.
He edited himself. So in those 45 minutes, it was just the instructions for the lesson. And those were his tapes. But that's what I did. I mean, Frank's tapes were longer than 45 minutes because his was, you know, not the brand new gadget.
Well, the lesson I did was...
I did that same editing. I edited out those things like barking at somebody or telling a scatological about how camels fuck in the desert and things like that. Used to tell. I suppose it was the same with your tree. He loved telling scatological stories. Did he do the same in those large training programs?
He certainly pushed the bounds of what I had been raised to consider appropriate.
Yeah. Oh, he loved that. So my transcriptions were the pure instructions verbatim from the tapes.
Interesting.
And they were, and so the way he did it was they were 45-minute lessons. I found when I taught, I made them closer to 1 hour.
I can understand that. He certainly was moving along. I mean, that those lessons, well, the impression, I mean, like I said, I just did the first lesson last week or the week before, and it moved along at a clip.
You did it from a tape.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
From one of those 45-minute tapes, though, I mean.
Yeah, but were those the Big Show recording tapes, or whose tapes?
Who knows? They don't have labels on them. They were files.
So you don't even know whose tapes, who made the tapes?
No, I don't.
So how did you get access to them?
You know, those things get passed around.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, okay, I mean,
it may have been someone else in the training program who passed around their tapes
that
they did.
Oh, let me tell you, there was at least one other person who I knew had the tapes and told me, this person, I will be vague, told me that they had the tapes. This was back in my youth. And then taunted me with the fact that I wouldn't get them from them. So that was, you know, that was whatever, 30 years ago.
Before you had trained?
No, it was at the very beginning of the training.
Yeah, uh-huh. Uh-huh, okay. Now, the Big Show recordings, I learned years later from David Burson that there had been a fire and they were destroyed in the fire.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I learned it from David Burson.
But so what version are they? Because I think, well, I know the David sells your notes, and I think the IFF has the from the family has the rights to the recordings, but I don't know what recordings they are. I'll have to check into that.
Yeah. Well, maybe there was a set. Maybe there were some sets that were sold before the fire. I don't know.
No, I'm sure there were sets that were sold before the fire, but I'm guessing that the other people who were there who recorded it, some of them might have kept that, and some of that might have gotten passed on. Well, look, thank you. Thank you. I feel like that was a wonderful journey. Nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
You're welcome. And I look forward to seeing this in some form or another.
Me too. Take care. Good night.
Bye.